from Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I know Bruce Rauner, he is spending gazillions of dollars. We are so lucky to have Governor Bruce Rauner, not only for his leadership and for his ideas, but his generosity of spirit and of wealth to help this state to create opportunity for people who he doesn't even know.
The machine is pounded with their power in the past. They have outspent us 2-3, 4-1. A lot of legislation, not this time. Not this time. That ain't happening. We are going toe-to-toe with them. In fact, we're going to do better than that.
Here they were, unwilling to say publicly the name of their own presidential nominee. I'll say it, Donald Trump.
We saw what happened 2 years ago. We woke up the day after the elections to find a right-to-work hedge fund billionaire had been elected governor. Think about it, an outsider with no practical experience or apparent interest in governing. Is this starting to sound familiar? I don't want to wake up on Wednesday, November 9th, to find the same thing has happened to our country.
Some of the sounds from political events this week that surrounded the Illinois State Fair. The fair's always a good barometer of where the parties stand at this time of the year. It seems like Republicans and Democrats are standing as far apart as ever on several issues. Well, the governor is backing another private fundraising operation to help out state properties. This time, a state fair foundation. We'll be talking about that and a whole lot more today on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, and Brian Mackey, IPR reporter. Our guest today, Bernie Schoenberg. He's political editor of the State Journal Register. And Bernie, good to see you.
Columnist, but thank you.
Columnist, okay, I'll go with
and
that.
Good to be here.
You don't want that promotion.
That's right.
I don't tell anybody what to do but myself.
Yeah. Brian, I'm going to start with you today because you were covering a lot of the events at the political days of the fair. Again, a chance to size up the parties. What was your takeaway?
The two big takeaways that I think a lot of us in the media noticed is that the Republicans wanted to talk about one guy who happened to not be a Republican, and the Democrats wanted to talk about a different guy who happened to not be a Democrat. For Republicans, it was all about House Speaker Michael Madigan and attacking Democrats and trying to use him as a way to bludgeon down-ticket Democrats. They hope that will let them cut into the supermajorities that Democrats have in the Illinois General Assembly. Likewise, for the Democrats, they wanted to talk about Donald Trump, and it was never, what Mark Kirk would do. It was the Mark Kirk Donald Trump agenda, or the Illinois Comptroller Leslie Munger even got her chance to be compared to Donald Trump, and we can get into the details of that later if you want. But those were kind of the two big things. Everybody was very focused on what the other guy was doing, trying to attack the other guy.
Does that really work at events like this? I mean, these are pretty much political insiders, I guess you might say, in some cases, or at least people who are really in the know about politics who come out and go to these events. Does it work to try to tie people together like that?
Well, you have to motivate for the election. And talking about Donald Trump to, say, the big breakfast at a hotel in Springfield put on by the Democratic County Chairman's Association where they're talking about we don't want Trump, that gets a pretty good rise. At the Republican event at the fairgrounds, or I can't remember if it was their breakfast or whatever, but when I think it was the fairgrounds, when you say, do we want Hillary Clinton as president? No, it was odd because just like Brian said, Donald Trump's name came up very seldom. Illinois has been just trending as a blue state in presidential elections. Our own Mark Kirk, the U.S. senator who did show up for the fair and talked about odd things about things that were made in Illinois, he has disavowed Donald Trump and says he won't vote for him. Our governor will not mention Trump's name. And when you ask if he'll vote for the nominee of his party, he laughs or says nothing. He just will not answer that question. It's all about state politics, focus on the state. And yet, there were a few Trump signs that people themselves brought to Republican Day at the fair, Governor's Day. But all of the giant signs on the fence were for Illinois candidates or the U.S. Senate candidate. But the presidential was not to be seen. But it is useful to try to get the troops motivated to say, both parties are saying, who runs the legislature and who runs the Congress and the United States Senate is very important this year, despite what happens with the presidency. I think both sides know that it's probably going to be a Hillary state, but the Democrats, because they like their candidate, talked about her more, and the Republicans saying, make sure you get out and vote down ballot no matter what you think of the presidential candidate.
Well, and it's insightful also just in terms of what does this say about their broader strategy? Sure, these are the party faithful, and it gets, you know, their feathers all ruffled, and they get excited to go out. That's the point, motivate the base. But further, this is clearly some of the strategies that they are going to be using to run away from Trump, to, when you're a Republican, particularly in a suburban district, to separate yourself from that and run a very local campaign. And for Hillary Clinton supporters, maybe not so much, but also the tying, we've clearly seen it. The Republicans passed out at their day buttons that called for term limits and had a picture of House Speaker Michael Madigan back from when he first entered the House. We believe it was from the Blue Book in 1971. So his official, you know, state government photograph in black and white where you can recognize him, but barely. I mean, he is several decades younger, of course. That is their strategy. They are already, they've come out with new digital ads. They're saying term limits, we are the party that can get rid of Mike Madigan. And they're hoping that that works. It's been tried before. Not so much. I do think Madigan has gone up in name recognition.
And they have an essentially bottomless pool of money from the pocketbook of Governor Bruce Rauner, which they have not had in the past.
Charlie, you were around when Mike Madigan got started.
Well, actually, we kind of started at the same time.
His term first limits. No, kidding. Totally kidding. We love you, Charlie.
His first elected public office was as a delegate to the Constitutional Convention, which met in 1970. Actually, the first meeting was in December of 69. And then in 1970, he ran for the General Assembly, was elected, and has served in the House ever since. But the thing that strikes me as being, I guess to be charitable, disingenuous about this whole notion, we need term limits to get rid of Mike Madigan. The average voter might think, oh yeah, if we enact term limits, Madigan's gone tomorrow. But if you read the language, which I encourage people to do, it's always easier to understand what this stuff is about when you actually read what the law says. It would say that the current form that's being pushed would not go on the ballot until 2018. And it says, starting in 2019, no one can serve more than 10 years. So if your goal is to get Madigan out of the legislature, it would kick him out in 2029.
So if my math is right, that's halfway through Bruce Rauner's fourth term as governor?
Right. And it's also a few months shy of Madigan's. He was born in 42, so that would be what his, he'd be 86 years old going on 87 in January of 2029.
Well, but I do think that clearly, there is a true belief on the part of Governor Bruce Rauner that Michael Madigan is bad for government. I think part of that is, yes, gin up the base politics, but that is something that he inherently believes. And obviously, though, yeah, part of this is politics. It's not just about Michael Madigan. This wouldn't work. I'm sure Bruce Rauner would love legislation where it would take effect in a more immediate fashion. But first of all, it's not going to pass. In fact, when you ask Madigan, and I've tried several times, why don't you call the bill? He just gives the response about why he believes that term limits do exist right now, and they're called elections. He doesn't say, and he does have the power as the Speaker of the House to basically bottle up bills so that legislators don't have a chance to vote on it. It's something that presumably legislators wouldn't want to pass, but they'd have a hard time not doing because it is so popular. And that's what it's about. And we asked a lot of questions of legislators, Republican office holders on their day at the fair or at the breakfast, actually just before it, saying, you know, so then what is the point? Because there is an online petition. There is not actually any sort of, you know, paper petition that anybody can sign to try and get this on the ballot next time around. Rather, it's just something online. It is, I think, fairly apparent that it is some sort of data operation, and yet the party chairman, Tim Schneider, wouldn't address exactly what it is that they're doing, but that is the new wave of campaigning. They have the money to do it, and in fact, House GOP leader Jim Durkin said, yeah, we've taken a page from Democrats' playbook there.
So just for people that don't understand that, I mean, exactly what would they gain by that, by going that route?
By collecting people's names, you are just building up your base of knowing who people are, where they are, being able to send them information, to send out emails that will teach them about Republican candidates that will make Democrats look bad, and it's part of a long-range plan.
It's a way to funnel your propaganda to people who are going to be amenable to it.
Well, fundraising, too. I mean, Barack Obama did this greatly. He was the digital president. You gain information on people, and then you can contact them. I will also say, for someone like Bruce Rauner, you don't have a state budget to crow about particularly. If you talk about term limits a lot, you're talking about something popular that is years away in having any effect, and you can just keep pounding home with that because it's perhaps easier to talk about that potential future positive than a lot of the negative going on in state government right now.
And I think there's just – we haven't talked – just to talk about how they are narrowly focusing this term limits push. When you look at – we sometimes get notifications from Comcast, right, the big cable company, about TV and satellite ad buys. And when a politician buys an ad, it's often on CNN, MSNBC, Food Network, HGTV, a wide variety of networks that appeal to men, women, people from across the political spectrum. You look at what channels they're targeting with this so-called turnaround Illinois, these term limit ads, and it's just Fox News, ESPN, Discovery Channel, History for the most of it. It's a much narrower set of channels. So you can see that they really have sort of, as you say, it's big data, right? This is something that Barack Obama is credited with kind of having taken to another level at the national stage. Bruce Rauner has talked about how he is trying to bring that sort of data operation here to Illinois to bring the Republicans into the 21st century. And it's just yet another example of how he has transformed that party with his money.
They were behind for so long. Right. They didn't have the money to do it. Mm-hmm. It's both that, the data operations and the money, and also I think taking a cue from Democrats in terms of seizing on something that's popular that maybe isn't going to pass, or in this case, it really isn't, but just get people excited, make it look like you're really being active. We asked Governor Pat Quinn, made an appearance. He didn't have any sort of speaking role, but the former governor was present at the Democrats' Day breakfast talking about his agenda for, lo and behold, term limits for the city of Chicago's mayor. He's tried this time and time again. That's basically how we got in a very long stretch of time Pat Quinn as governor. So it's taking a cue from that playbook.
Well, when we talk about term limits, a lot of people who support that say that it prevents people from becoming too powerful in government. Well, here Bruce Rauner is talking about funding the entire Republican operation himself, or at least his organization doing this. You know, it seems to me like that's a little disingenuous, too. Here's somebody who has going to have a lot of power in the Republican Party. You might say he is the Republican Party.
Well, he will claim that the special interests, quote unquote, are funding the Democrats, and he's just catching up, and it depends what you want to do it for. Of course, when he talks special interests, he's usually talking about government sector unions. So that's, you know, just part of the argument. And it's funny because the people that he wants to carry the term limit water for him are like Jim Durkin, who heads the House Republicans, and Christine Redonio, who heads the Senate Republicans, and they've each got about 20-ish years in the legislature, and nobody is like saying that they're going to be leaving office anytime soon. Got to keep, you know, on a fair playing field for all, but, you know, people in his party are doing the same thing. You know, there's always this argument also that if all the politicians leave after 8 years, and I think the people around this table watch legislators. The most effective legislators are often the ones that have been there for a long time, and you can say that's good or bad. Often it is good because you learn, like in any other job, how to get things done. But the lobbyists stay around and the staff stays around. And so, you know, there is an argument against term limits because who will really be running things? The people who know where the bodies are buried and where the levers of power are going to still be hanging around the halls of the State House.
As long as we journalists still have Charlie Wheeler
on
our side.
That's right. But the public, because there's such an anti-government mood, fed in large part by lots of media outlets and just general disgust with the way things are going, term limits are popular.
I made the comment about Rauner, but on the flip side of that, I mean, Madigan controls the state party, he controls the Illinois House. He also has a lot of power vested in one person. You might want to say this is a two-man state. I guess Brian talked earlier this week about a one-man party, but I mean, isn't that part of the problem too?
I would dispute that notion, though, because the Democrats are kind of a mess, and that's why we don't have a permanent higher tax rate, right? Because what I say say a mess, I mean, that's by design. The Democrats are a big tent in Illinois. You can be pro-gun Democrat. You can be an anti-gun Democrat. You can be a pro-life Democrat or a pro-choice Democrat. And because they have sort of allowed, you know, themselves to have a lot of ideological diversity in order to gain bigger majorities, it's very difficult for them to turn on a dime and kind of slam through a policy proposal. I remember a few years ago, we were talking a lot about same-sex marriage. For a blue state, Illinois was pretty slow to adopt that, in part because Speaker Madigan and the other Democratic leaders had to balance a lot of competing interests among their members. So I don't know that that's necessarily an apt analogy. This point we were talking about earlier, that you were talking about earlier with the money question, this was directly asked to House Republican leader Jim Durkin. You know, how can you compare on one side thousands of quote-unquote special interests or government union members donating money that then goes to support Democrats to one man opening his pocketbook and spending what for him is a relatively small amount of money based on his overall net worth? And Durkin said, money's green. That was his answer.
I do want to say real quick, just to take off of your point, I think it is in part because Democrats have this quote-unquote big tent that sometimes they're slower on policy. But when it comes to taxes and such, it may be that, but it could also be, I think, by design. They don't want to give Governor Bruce Rauner a bunch of money to play with. They also don't want to give him the fodder that he can then use his millions of dollars to pour into campaign ads. So part of that could be, even if you could get enough Democrats
now,
on board.
Now, but I'm saying like yeah, 2011.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I do think that Madigan clearly does hold many levers of power, as do really any of the longtime leaders. And part of that is outside of government. You know, that was something else that Governor Rauner continually takes issue with and that Republicans brought up, the outside jobs that these individuals hold. And really, it's on both sides of the aisle. You know, Jim Durkin is also an attorney. You have both Cullerton and Madigan. That is something that I think, again, Rauner is against, that Republicans address. They said it is legal. And that's basically Madigan's defense, is that he can.
Yeah. The term that they were, the Republicans were using, which I think is a pretty politically, what do you want to say, convincing or astute, is legal corruption, right? That's sort of a term in art and political science. And it's this idea that, you know, the biggest scandal is often not what's illegal. The biggest scandal is what's legal.
And both parties probably are guilty in when you look back through the years on that. Charlie, I know you were trying to get in here.
Well, I was going to say that gets back to the question of, what should a legislator be? Should a legislator be someone who has no interests at all? Or should it be someone who lives a life outside of the halls of the General Assembly, actually does have a job, actually does have other things going for him? After watching this stuff for quite some time, I've concluded that it's probably better off to have people with a certain level of expertise. If you're going to be talking about farm policy, it's not good that you have somebody like Charlie Wheeler setting the bar who doesn't know beans. I can tell a chicken from a pig, but not much more than that. So if there are people who are farmers and who have hands-on experience, that's good. Same thing with insurance. If you have people who are in the field, they can provide the inside expertise. They can tell their colleagues, here's how it really works. And I think that stuff is very valuable. And to say, as some people would suggest, that no, you should only be a full-time legislator and you should give up everything else, that's difficult. I don't think you get the kind of balance that you need. I'd like to see more people with, what would you say, outside jobs than what we have now, where a lot of people say they're full-time lawmakers. And unless you're someone like Bruce Rauner, who is independently wealthy and can who work for a dollar a day or a dollar a year, average people don't have a chance.
Well, and like you say, Charlie, I think that's mostly just a winning political argument. It's, if you actually drill down, it's pretty hypocritical because Jim Durkin, the House Republican leader, is a lawyer, has, you know, outside a lot of legislators in both parties have those outside jobs. It's just a good talking point when you can
come. I think Rauner really believes it.
I think he does believe it, but I mean, it's still I'm not just talking about Rauner. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, you know, if you look at all the people in Rauner's political party, a lot of them also have outside work. And we just heard, Amanda, you had an excellent interview. I would encourage people to go back and listen to that with Senator Matt Murphy, who is a Republican who's, you know, has railed against pay hikes for legislators in the past, and he says he's leaving the legislature because he's got four kids, he's in his mid-40s, and he needs to earn more money
by
for
the
his
way, Brian,
family.
Well,
that's
going to be a real loss for the General Assembly,
right,
too, because Matt Murphy has the expertise, and he has budget expertise and taxation expertise, and that's not the kind of stuff that you can replace overnight.
It's almost like a statewide office before. By the way, Brian, at the beginning of the show, that just that clip that we heard, that was that Richard Porter?
Yes.
And he is Republican
committeeman.
The one who talked about all of Bruce's money and how he's using it the right way. Yeah, just kind of an interesting perspective.
Before we move on here, let me, Bernie, I want to go back to Donald Trump and the discussion or lack thereof of Donald Trump by Republicans. And, of course, Democrats saying his name more so. You're covering the Springfield area, Sangamon County. It's a Republican hotbed, basically. He likely will do very well, I would think, in Sangamon County and certainly probably in many areas downstate. So there will be a lot of Republicans who want to embrace Donald Trump, I would think, because it would benefit them.
I will tell you that I don't get a lot of enthusiasm from the regular Republicans around Springfield. Springfield Republicans in all of my, 30 years of covering this stuff around here are kind of it's more of an economic thing. State government has always provided jobs. You support candidates. You and your kids get jobs at the state or at the county. Everything is good. There's not that strong of an ideological push. The kind of rhetoric that Donald Trump has used, at least perhaps until the latest pivot, has turned a lot of people off in that. You know, when you talk like Rosemary Long, the chair of the party, she'll say she's for Trump, but of course she doesn't express tremendous opinions on a lot of things. She runs the organization quite efficiently, but there are pockets of it, and I think more rank and file. I think the people who comment on online in newspapers and Twitter and those things, you're going to get more. But there's a lot of people. I know some very strong Republicans in town who I've even been told. One in particular I think of is going to vote for Hillary because they just don't like the kind of rhetoric that Trump gives. Actually, I know a couple like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. We are kind of center of the country, and this name-calling kind of stuff and, going along the edge, this kind of non-presidential appearance and rhetoric has turned a lot of people off.
But for sure, Trump definitely has his supporters. He may be helpful in districts, particularly more downstate. And there are Republicans, both that we saw yesterday. I know I met some at the Republican National Convention who are bothered that the top of their party's leaders are not getting behind their presidential candidate.
And I think that's why Bruce Rauner has just absolutely refused to talk about Trump.
Period. Either side. Won't answer
a question, ignores you.
Don't get into trouble that way.
Just because he doesn't want to anger anyone. Yeah.
And I think if your focus is on winning legislative seats, it's kind of a double-edged sword. Some of the targets that Republicans are focusing on the Democratic side, particularly in the House, are suburban districts, and a lot of them are female. And so that's a vote, the so-called soccer mom vote, that Donald Trump is not likely to win. So we don't want to talk about him up in the suburbs. On the other hand, down in southern Illinois, where they're attacking incumbent Democrats as being tools of Mike Madigan, my guess is that, and you probably know better than I, Sean, because you're from southern Illinois, there's probably a lot of people who agree with Donald Trump's positions.
And there are a lot of people, I think, in some parts of Illinois, especially more rural and sometimes economically depressed areas, feel as though government is against them. Hillary Clinton represents establishment. He doesn't. Yeah. So that's how they look at it. Let me save a couple of minutes here. Amanda, the governor backs something that was created this week, a state fair foundation. What's all the hubbub surrounding this thing?
Well, so this is interesting. Governor Bruce Rauner had pushed this concept, and yet the General Assembly never passed it. It depends on who you talk to in terms of why that is. There were evidently concerns regarding, for example, will prevailing wage be paid by projects supported by this foundation? How about the following of procurement rules? And when the legislature didn't pass it, instead you had Governor Bruce Rauner. It seems he calls it a private effort, but it was very clear that he was involved. If you speak to the members of this new foundation board that's going to be raising money, private dollars, they say they're going to go to, John Deere, for example, Caterpillar, and request money to help support $180 million that is needed to basically get the fairground infrastructure buildings, roofs fixed at the fairgrounds in both Springfield and DeCoin. So again, Rauner saying that it's private, but The speaker is having some definite questions about it.
And Bernie, just about a minute here. This is not the first time the governor has sort of gone this route, going around the legislature or government.
Well, he wanted a private foundation to work with the Department of Commerce, too, because he says it's too hard for businesses to go through all the red tape. And our former Department of Commerce and other states have this kind of a private agency. So the legislature wouldn't do it. He just set it up. And, you know, again, we will see where that goes
and
if everything is
mansion.
Public. Oh, that's right. The executive mansion, he wanted to get it fixed. He set up a private foundation for that and, you know, collecting money. We will see, again, if all rules are followed, if things go well. But he sees it as money the state should be getting from our own big industries or donors. While the other side is raising concerns about procurement, some of the Democrats, including Speaker Madigan, this might just be free money for the state. We'll see.
And Brian, just real quick here, but I mean, you can't argue that all of these things, especially the mansion or the state fairgrounds, they're in need of money.
They are definitely in need of money, and that's why it's difficult for people to say no at a time like this when the state is so short of money. It's just worth remembering that what one person calls red tape is what, you know, a few years ago was called necessary reforms after Rod Blagojevich was in office.
All right, we're going to go to our notes from the field. Charlie, I'll start with you.
Okay, well, this past week, Governor Rauner signed a piece of legislation that's going to be very important to housekeepers, nannies, and other domestic workers. It puts them under the protection of a lot of the labor-related laws against sexual harassment in the workplace, for example, requiring that minimum wage be paid, requiring that you only work so many days in a week, that sort of thing, that cover most everybody else in the labor force, but historically have not included people, these domestic workers. And now they'll be in starting January 1st.
Bernie Schoenberg?
Yeah, and Sean, thanks for reminding me. I tweeted this, but at Democrat Day at the fair, Jesse White continues to be very popular and has said he has no intention of running for another four-year term because he got elected first in 1998 to the current office, and there were chants of a smallish crowd, but under the tent of four more years, and I don't know if Jesse will move forward with that. He has said he has no intention. We'll see. But there's sure a lot of pressure because the Democrats would love to have him run again because then they could worry about other races.
He's the term limit guy they ought to be going after, I guess, right? 20
yeah.
years he'll be here. Brian Mackey.
Yeah, one of the big political shows at the State Fair is always the sale of champions. There was a record-setting amount this year paid for the grand champion steer by tradition bought by the governor with another group called Friends of the Exhibitors. I guess we have dark money even in that now. But I also like to highlight some of the lesser-known champions, Honey, Doe's Milk, Snack Sticks, bought by our own Senator Sam McCann from Central Illinois here, and of course the grand champion Mexican Cheese V&V Supremo out of Chicago, Illinois.
All right, Amanda Vinicky.
Sounds delicious. Didn't get to try any of those, but I did get to go to a State Fair concert, saw Kiss, where there was an appearance. It was during a presentation for Kiss's big supporters of veterans, and you had both Springfield Mayor Langfelder and also Comptroller Leslie Munger take the stage. She said she was there on behalf of Governor Bruce Rauner. That elicited, gotta say, mostly boos from the crowd. Gene Simmons and crew were very diplomatic about it. They said, no matter your political beliefs, it is great to be a patriot. Go America, and we appreciate our military.
Were there other politicians there at the show?
Those were the only two. I actually did see State Senator Don Harmon, but he evidently left before that presentation, was not at all on stage. It was really Munger who was the one that I think caught the opposite side of what fans were doing for the rock band.
All right, that will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast include Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, Brian Mackey, and columnist Bernie Schoenberg with the State Journal Register. You can get a podcast of State Week at nprillinois.org. You can also find us on the NPR One app. Look for State Week. The production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.